Hello, everyone. This is Tom Uren, and I'm here with the Gruck for another Between Two Nerds discussion. G'day, Gruck.
G'day, Tom.
I'd like to thank Island, who makes what is called an enterprise browser, for supporting this week's show. So I had a chat with Mike Fay, the CEO of Island, and that should be up on this channel. So have a listen to that. I found it quite interesting because, I mean, what is an enterprise browser? I don't know. Well, I didn't know, but now I do. I'd also like to thank the Hewlett Foundation's Cyber Initiative for their support. So, Gruck, one of the things I wrote about in the last week was proposed changes to the Investigatory Powers Act in the UK. And Patrick and I had a discussion afterwards where we talked about how governments are actually constrained and that there's many ways that companies can push back. Now, one of the things that I considered putting in my piece was this example of Google upsetting a counterterrorism operation. So the story is...
That was the one where they killed like 11 O'Days and all that stuff.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's right. So the story is, unconfirmed by governments or Google itself, but this is a story, that there was a counterterrorism operation. It was very well run. It had numerous 0 days across Android, iOS, Windows, Chrome. And Google published the details about it that subsequently stopped the operation because those bugs were patched. And that seemed to me to be a good example of a corporation making a decision about, I guess, what governments can do on the internet.
Uh-huh.
And in this case, it seems like Google knew that it was a Western government operation.
Right.
And the headline on the article, which was in the MIT Tech Review, Massachusetts Institute of Technology Technology Review, is that they unilaterally shut down the operation. Now, right. I kind of wonder whether Google is the entity... or any company is the entity you want to make that decision. So it's
right.
On the one hand, you've got a cybersecurity risk. And on the other hand, you've got a potentially life and death situation involving counterterrorism. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We don't really know.
Right. But they're both unknown risks, right? There's the theoretical risk of other people having these same O'Days who would then use them for some purpose that would cause some disruption or harm of some sort, possibly.
Yep.
Versus they might or might not be monitoring an active terrorist plot to do something in the short term that would kill people. They're both unknowns, but they're different unknowns, I think, is...
Yeah. I'm not sure that governments are all that good at making that kind of trade-off. But on the other hand, that's what governments in liberal democracies are meant to do. Like, they're meant to weigh up apples and oranges and come up with a decision.
Right.
Whereas...
Yeah. We did not elect Google to that position.
That's right. And
right.
Google, I mean, its purpose is to make money for shareholders. That's kind of definitionally what a corporation, a public company is about.
It's a clash, I don't know, value systems maybe, but there are certainly two different approaches to the world that are going on there. And they're coming into conflict. So you've got these corporations with they are beholden to shareholder value. And that guides what they do to a large extent. And then you've got, you know, people who are theoretically beholden to the voters, you know, these liberal democracies, who have their own interests. So, you know, we've got like the IPA, as we were saying earlier, mm-hmm. where it's got like these weird clauses that you couldn't actually enforce, like trying to get a telco not to patch their systems. I mean, they already don't patch their systems as it is. You don't have to tell them to do it. But, you know, like it's these sort of weird things that they've come up with. We've got this sort of one concrete example, but we could make a theoretical example that's very similar. If we stick with Google, right? And we stick with a liberal democracy like the Netherlands. So if you take Google and Google decides we are going to stop all cyber espionage activity conducted by the Netherlands, right? They're no longer going to do any offensive operations. We're going to use all of our telemetry. We're going to use all of our monitoring. We're going to use all of the data about everything that we know. We've got the locations of people who are going to and from the offices. And so we're going to publish a list of like all of their cyber operators. We're going to, every time they try and do something, we're going to look at their packets and we're going to kill their bugs. I think it's fair to say that they are not technically stopped from doing that. That it's not a technical thing that keeps them from doing that. It's policy. Like, they don't want to do it because it would be bad for them
so
as a company.
That makes me wonder whether they're actually doing something like that for somewhere like China or Russia, right?
Right.
And
right.
So I guess these companies have agency and mm-hmm. they're making decisions about what they do. So in the counterterrorism example, Google decided to publicize those bugs. Mm-hmm. I think Kaspersky is the other company I'm aware of.
They did that Cisco one where they exposed an active CT and CSAM operation.
And I thought they had also exposed a Russian operation. Is that right?
they've done that, but I don't think that's going to happen again. Not if they ever want to use a private jet to go anywhere.
I'm sure that there's got to be other companies that have come across operations that have either not publicized them or I think the MIT article said that mm-hmm. often they're quietly patched without publicity.
So this is a tough one, but to me, it seems if you are discovered by Google, up your game, mm-hmm. you know, get better, get good. But on the other hand, Google is pretty damn powerful, right?
Well, in the counterterrorism example, it was because they were serving exploits from watering holes. And so there's mm-hmm. a clear mechanism for web scraping, watering hole,
right.
getting served to an detect. Exploit.
Right.
It seems like that's the kind of thing that would be unavoidable to some degree. Like
the pushback against the get good argument is that it's damn hard. Like Cloudflare is the internet, right? You can't avoid these sort of things. And I think that the cost involved is also prohibitive, right? Like I think Belgium, for example, they're quite rich, but they don't have a particularly huge cyber group. They cannot get good versus Google and Amazon and Microsoft and all this stuff, but they still have the right to do counterterrorism operations to protect their citizens, right? Like, I think that the cost of beating those top-tier vendors shouldn't be the price of entry to protect your citizens from terrorists,
right,
if that makes sense.
Right. So I guess you seem to be arguing that there's a space for those companies to turn a blind eye if it's for the good guys.
I think that there's a definite case that liberal democracies, they're team us,
right?
I guess, like I'm willing to go out on a fence and say I support liberal democracy against authoritarianism. I know it's a controversial opinion, and I'm going to get a lot of flack for it, but but I'm very much of the position that some countries maybe do not deserve the benefit of the doubt.
Right, right. I also find that non-controversial. So there are some countries that use cyber operations to oppress people. Like
right.
minorities, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So another example I was thinking of where a company has made a choice is Facebook when it comes to disinformation. And
absolutely, yes.
Yep. So this last week, for example, they kicked off what they called the largest ever online influence operation. So it's like, I think it was 7,000 odd Facebook accounts or pages, you know, other stuff as well. And what I think is interesting about Facebook is they've chosen a position that allows them to do what Western governments want without formally picking sides. So they've got, kind of to recap, they have, for disinformation, they have this measure which is coordinated inauthentic behavior. So the influence campaign they kicked off was not real people. They were coordinating together to promote whatever. Like from Facebook's point of view, it doesn't matter what they were promoting. It's that the...
Right. It's the act of the promotion itself.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what they are targeting. And it's a very clever way of scoping what they do, so that rather than saying things that promote Pepsi are okay, but anything that promotes Coke, we're going to block. Right. Or you know, some completely arbitrary distinction.
Yep.
If it's a real grassroots phenomenon, that's fine. But if it's manipulated, that's not. And I think that's a very clever approach that they've done, and it's worked well for them. On that, what I personally find particularly interesting is if you look at sort of 2016, you know, back when they didn't have this stuff in place, and there was this huge disinformation, like all of these disinformation campaigns going on. And then sort of in 2017 and 18, as Facebook started putting the stuff in place and fixing it, these were policies from a private company that impacted the way that state intelligence agencies operate, right? Like they completely changed the operational environment and forced states to adjust the way that they do stuff just because of this, you know, policy document that got put into place. And I find that interesting in itself, that there's these conflicting value systems and there are different policies coming into place. Here you again have that example of like Facebook has now changed government behavior.
Yeah, yeah. So that particular example seems to me particularly driven by, I don't know, maybe I'm being cynical, but particularly being driven by shareholder value, because it's a choice that is about avoiding picking sides. And so that is very much about being a global company rather than being a US company. So we're not going to stop Chinese disinformation campaigns or Russian
or Belgian or whomever. We're just going to stop
campaigns
in general.
Yeah. And now, having said it's very clever, I think maybe it might well be the only way to do it. Like, I'm not sure that there's... Well, I guess the alternative is to say we're a US company and we will tackle adversaries of the US or something like that.
Right. In a way that's a reasonable position to take as well, but then it becomes things of like, well, if there was a disinformation campaign for the election in Nigeria or in Kenya, which side is the pro-US side that you want to get involved in? You know, I think it becomes untenable.
Right.
To use that as your metric. In this sense, having the sort of generic measure is basically the only one that can work globally, because you can't have a horse in every race.
Right.
Right. But I think maybe a counterpoint to, Facebook, who's done it very well, and I really hate to praise Facebook, but you know, there it is.
and we're talking specifically about their policies on disinformation, right? So we're not sort of commenting
in isolation.
On, yeah.
yeah. Nothing else. Just that one specific thing, which absolutely, you know, kudos. I think sort of why we can praise this example, but I'm still very hesitant to leave it with vendors. And I think that the counterpoint is Twitter, right? Where even when they were trying, they were not doing particularly well. And this was pre-Elon Musk. They weren't doing terribly, but they weren't doing particularly great.
Yeah, they had a, was it a trust and safety team that would actively look for information operations, and they would publish.
Yeah, they had a transparency report about what
and they would publish the actual tweets from these campaigns. And I actually was involved in a report on a Chinese one. Mm-hmm. Drew some pretty graphs. Good times.
yeah. No, you know, they were making an effort. And it's just, it's inherently difficult in that environment where part of the problem is that it's not necessarily inauthentic behavior. It's just that you have you have people who literally behave like robots. We have these authentic grassroots campaigns of automaton people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yep. I mean, they would definitely wrap up real people by accident in and sort of tar them with the inauthentic brush.
Right. Right. But, you know, of course, the thing with Twitter is it's no longer Twitter, right? Now it's X. And X does not give a f***. Right. And it's very much become partisan. It's got this pay-to-play aspect.
Yep.
There's this disproportionate cracking down on sort of left-wing American ideas versus these far-right talking points. Similarly, Elon is sort of quite pro-Russian. And, you know, it's just all of these complexities. And it's clear that that's bad for Twitter. But obviously, where it's just a lot more complicated is something like Starlink, where you again have just one person
yep.
who can make decisions about internet connectivity in all of these places. And that's, you know, do we want one individual having control over that level of infrastructure that is so important?
Well, I mean, I think the answer is clearly no, but then what's the alternative is the problem. And I think people are extremely reluctant to just give governments all the power.
Right,
For good reason too.
Absolutely. While I agree with that, I think at some point, you know, we did not elect Google to make counter-terrorist decisions. Right. And I think it's that dynamic of that at some point there's these life and death decisions that are being made. And I don't think shareholder value is the value system that we want making those decisions or guiding those decisions.
But I mean, even in the case of Google, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I don't agree with that decision,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure that it's wrong, right? And so I think it's arguable. And I think that Google, despite being a public company, also sits within the kind of value system.
Right.
Like they believed that they were doing the right thing. They didn't make...
That was a moral argument.
Yeah. Right. They didn't we will patch these bugs because it'll make us more money. We will patch these bugs because that's what we do. We make the internet a safer place.
That is the right thing to do. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't think Google was being immoral or driven by greed. I just think that corporations, by their nature, don't deal with those decisions day in and day out, like counterterrorism decisions.
Right.
And I guess in the case of Facebook, they're also constrained by what they think the right thing to do is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also by public opinion. And so for them, public opinion was very much, we want you to do something about this. And they found a perfect narrow path to walk that I think allowed them to do stuff without...
Yeah. There was thought that was put into it and they were careful in what they picked.
Yeah.
And it was the right thing.
Whereas I think the problem with Twitter and Elon Musk is he appears to be unconstrained by shareholder value because he owns the company, right? He's not answering to shareholders.
But I think the other thing is that as just one individual, whatever his personal system of morals and morality is,
that's what we're seeing. Yeah.
It's just his.
Right, yeah. So I think one of the trends I've noticed is that there's more talk about values by governments. And I think that's the kind of guiding star that aligns corporate behavior with government behavior. If you can point to something that's outside of laws but gives you a direction in which to head and a kind of...
We're all trying to achieve these sort of things.
Yes.
You know, freedom, liberty, justice, etc. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's, I think, a government response to that kind of playing field in a way that is an attractive power rather than a compelling...
Right. They're not trying to coerce behavior. They're trying to encourage. Yeah.
Right. I think that power of attraction works for many, many companies, but not when they're morally bankrupt.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks, Grok.